In my talk this evening, I'm going to give you a little background about these characters at the heart of the Georgian age, which isn't as boring. They are not as boring as people think. And because I am a social historian at heart, I shall cover some Georgian court culture. And I'm going to end by telling you a bit about Peter the Wild Boy. He's one of my favourite Georgian characters. He's an incredibly intriguing mystery, and he opens up some of the themes of the age. So let's travel now to the little electorate of Hanover in Germany. Dinky little Hanover, a little state all on its own, where we meet the three characters who dominate the first few decades of Georgian Britain. We recently went to film in Hanover, and it was a very pleasant experience because all the Germans said, "Hooray! You don't want to talk about the war. That makes such a change." Now, had we been visiting Hanover at the start of 1714, we may well have come across George, Elector of Hanover, seen here as the future King George I of Great Britain. But in 1714, he was still only Elector of Hanover. Or we may have met his son, George Augustus, the future King George II of Great Britain. Now, the best known sort of pub quiz fact about George II is that he was the last British monarch to lead the troops in person on the battlefield. Now, that is about the end of most people's knowledge of him, even if they get that far. And it's quite appropriate that, because he was a very good soldier. He had a fiery, dictatorial, tempestuous personality. This made him a good soldier. It didn't make him such a good constitutional monarch, where he required tact and patience and finesse. None of these things did he possess, poor old George. His wife Caroline is my favourite queen, and his courtship of her was a suitably fiery, passionate affair. This is what he wrote in his love letters: "I desire nothing so much as to throw myself at my princess's feet and promise her eternal devotion." Well, that worked. Might work on me, actually. And he married Caroline of Ansbach, another of these little German states, in 1705. And she became resident in Hanover with him and her father-in-law. Now, Caroline is interesting because she was a lifelong religious radical. She was a woman with a brain. She was a supporter of philosophers like Leibniz and Newton. She was interested in art and culture and science. And it's really interesting because she comes from a tradition they have in Germany of clever, lively royal women. It's quite unlike the British tradition, where royal women are kind of expected to put up and shut up. So Caroline would cause some real waves when she came over to Britain. Now, upon her marriage then to the future King George II, she had to go and live in Hanover. And this is where they all lived. This is the palace of Herrenhausen, which is just outside Hanover. The central part has just been rebuilt. Yes, completely rebuilt. It's a massive project that has been paid for by Volkswagen. And they're doing this because everybody in Hanover is going to go mad next year. They're really, really excited about the tercentenary anniversary, and they're having all sorts of exhibitions. Now, this is the country palace, I should have said, and it was balanced by the city palace. And this is a setup that you also get in London, where the central urban palace was St. James's, and then the royal family could also use the garden palace of Kensington, set in its park, as their sort of leisure destination. Now, having moved to Herrenhausen, Caroline comes into the orbit of her father-in-law. Now, even at the time, the Elector of Hanover, George, was not well known because of his shy and devious nature. Because people found him difficult to get to know, gossip filled in the gaps. And that's why he's developed this reputation as a sort of deviant sexual athlete. This is Lord Chesterfield on George I. It was said that he rejected no woman if she were very willing, very fat, and had great breasts. And we're told the consequence of this was that candidates for the position of royal mistress, well, they tried to put on weight. They strained and swelled to put on weight. Some succeeded and others burst. I'm sorry to say, though, that there isn't any truth in this at all. These words come from Lord Chesterfield, the British courtier, and they're very typical of the xenophobic, nasty views of the British, who did not feel at all warmly disposed to this man when he came over to Britain. And actually, there was quite a lot of tension and anti-German feeling at the British court, which this is just typical of. George I, in fact, lived very quietly with his single, very skinny, an almost respectable mistress for many years. But it is true that there was a genuine sexual scandal in his past, and that is what happened to his wife Sophia, the mother of the future George II. In the 1690s, this woman Sophia had embarked upon a flagrant and rather indiscreet adulterous relationship with a Swede, Count Konigsmark. Their love letters got out. George was humiliated in all the drawing rooms of Europe. There was a lot of gossip. And gossip also maintained that he took action. It is said that he had his wife's lover murdered. This is the Leiner Palace, the central downtown palace in Hanover. I don't know why the Tudors get all the glory when all this wonderful stuff is going on with the Hanoverians. This is the Leiner Palace in central Hanover. And one night, we are told, as Count Konigsmark, the Swede, was making his way along the corridors towards the bedroom of Sophia, he was captured by an Italian assassin. And this is the spot, ladies and gentlemen, in the river where his dead body is supposed to have been thrown. Now, when I tell you that this story comes from the memoirs of Horace Walpole, those of you who know about the 18th century will also know that we can't actually rely on Horace Walpole. He was a terrible storyteller. But it is undeniable that George, Elector of Hanover, divorced his wife and he put her under house arrest in a remote German castle for the rest of her life. And his son, George II, never saw his mother again, although she lived for another 30 years, I think it was. So this fact, the father having locked up the mother of the son, I think can explain the famously bad relationship we get between these generations of the George and royal family. George the one, George the two, who hate each other.